You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network at cvillepodcast.com. Lectures, radio shows, and more are available on demand at cvillepodcast.com. Now available through email. Sign up on our homepage. I'm Dan Gould. Candidates seeking election to three vacancies on Albemarle County's Board of Supervisors presented their views on a number of topics of local interest. The candidates spoke at the September 14, 2011 meeting of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia. The meeting was held at the Charlottesville Senior Center. Following the presentation, questions were taken from the audience. The program was moderated by SSV Secretary Bill Davis.
My name is Bill Davis. I'm the Secretary of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia. And I want to welcome everyone to the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors Candidate Forum. As you know, we hold these at election time and are proud to present our folks today. At this time, I would like to introduce Peter Thompson, who is the head of the Senior Center, if Peter's here, to welcome us. Okay.
That's okay. We're sneaking up around Bill left and right here. Want to take the great pleasure of welcoming everybody. I am Peter Thompson. I have the great pleasure of serving our community as the director of the Senior Center here for the last 12 years. And many of you know our Senior Center, but for those who don't, our mission is to involve, enrich, and empower seniors in our community. And we do that through about 100 of our own programs that meet the holistic wellness of seniors in our community, intellectual, physical, social, spiritual, and emotional. But we also do that through a lot of partnership programming, and we're very proud of our partnership with the Senior Statesmen of Virginia, because a big way that we do involve, enrich, and empower is to hold these candidate forums and the other things that we do every month, year in, year out, with the Senior Statesmen of Virginia. Because we are a nonpartisan organization, we also get no government funding, so we have no dog in this fight, so to speak, from that standpoint. But we're very proud to be able to give you the opportunity to meet your candidates firsthand and to hear from them firsthand. And I want to personally, as a resident of Albemarle County, thank all of those folks who are up there who are already serving and are running for office. I think everybody here in this room clearly is very civically engaged, or you wouldn't be here today. I'm sure you're all registered to vote, encourage other people to vote, talk to your elected officials at every level, attend public hearings, write letters, write emails. You do all those things, but it's a huge step forward to take all that level to the level of actually going up there and running for office. So I want to thank all the people for doing that on the behalf of our county. And on behalf of our Senior Center, welcome, and I'll give it back to Bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. I'm going to give you the ground rules for our forum today. Each candidate will have 5 minutes in which to introduce themselves, say a little bit about what they want. We will have questions, and we have cards for anyone who doesn't have one that wants to give a question, and we'll have people coming around picking up the questions. You just need to hold them up. I think he saw that. Now, we'll have written questions only, and the questions will be drawn at random. And so there won't be any pre-sorting or selection, other than if we have two or more questions about the same exact thing, we'll combine them into one question. There will be no closing statements. We want to open this up to questions as long as we can. We will close promptly at 3 o'clock. We have a timer for the candidates. And down front, it will tell them when their 5 minutes is up, and it will tell them when their 2 minutes is up. I'd like to introduce the candidates by district. From the Ravenna District, we have Kenneth Boyd, Cynthia Neft. From the Scottsville District, we have Christopher Dummler and James Norwood. And from Whitehall, we have Ann Mellick, who is unopposed. So with that, I'd like to start with the first candidate, and I'll run just across the podium, starting with Ken Boyd.
Well, thank you, and thank you all for coming here tonight. I want to thank the senior statesmen for hosting this forum. I think it's a great show of citizenship for them to bring us together and allow us to tell you what we're about and the kind of issues that are important to us. I also want to thank the Senior Center for providing such a great venue to have this. I'd recognize a lot of people in the room here, and of course I've been around here for a while, but just to for those who don't know me, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I have four children and two grandchildren. I've lived here in Albemarle County for over 30 years. I was first brought here by Hovey Dabney, who I know a lot of you knew, to work for Jefferson National Bank, and that was in 1981. I've been very interested in education, and that's what got me started into politics. Back in the mid-1990s, when George Allen was pushing forward with his standards of learning, I was very interested in that. I had always been involved in the schools as my four children were going to public schools. I had been on the Parent Council. I was actually one of the original members of the Parent Council that helped form that years ago. I've been a PTO president at both of two different schools, Burley Middle School and Monticello High School. Was the first PTO president there. Education is just something that's always been a passion of mine and something I've been involved in. In 1999, I decided to run for the school board after having spent an awful lot of time serving in carnivals and going to parent conferences and all the things that I'm seeing some heads nodding out there that you understand what that is, coaching and being very involved with my kids' education. I won the election and spent 4 years on the school board from 2000 to 2003. 2003, my youngest son had graduated from school, so I decided to move on to the Board of Supervisors and ran and won that election, and I've been serving as your supervisor for the last 8 years. There's a number of issues that I think are important to us here, and I want to talk about some of these in my 5 minutes here. I'm watching Mr. Boyd here, who's our timekeeper. Fiscal responsibility is something that I also think is important. It goes right along with education. We're in challenging economic times right now. And we all know that we're going to, just like you're doing in your personal efforts and as well as in your businesses, you're having to cut back on things. And it would be very easy for us here as a local government to fall into the pattern of what's happening in Washington, D.C. And that is to borrow money that you can't pay back. And we can do that. And we've all actually had discussions about this on the Board of Supervisors. I've been a strong proponent of the fact that this is not a time to raise taxes on our constituents. First of all, I know that they're hurting. I talked to many people that are living on fixed incomes that just can't afford to be paying more taxes right now. So we in the county had to become a lot more fiscally responsible. We cut our operating budget, and we cut a tremendous amount of money out of our CIP, which is our capital improvement plan. Another area that I think is important to us now is jobs. That's a top priority of mine, is to make sure that we have good, high-paying, career ladder jobs for our people here. This is why 4 years ago, about 5 years ago, I worked very closely with the DIA to bring those jobs here. A lot of people don't realize, but NGIC was also hinging on that decision because the BRAC administration, Washington, D.C. had decided they wanted to put these two groups together, DIA and the NGIC. And if DIA couldn't have got through some of the regulatory problems they were having locally here, they were going to go somewhere else. And with them, shortly thereafter, I was told by a number of people in Washington, the NGIC was going to drive away. So keeping those jobs here is very important to me. We set up and established on the board some years ago an economic opportunity fund that was paramount in keeping MicroAir here in this neighborhood, another 127 jobs. With between NGIC and DIA, we're talking 1,600 to 1,700 jobs that were involved there. These are good, high-paying jobs. And as you'll find out, just recently they hired 32 local people here at DIA. So it's not just jobs being brought in, they're jobs they're hiring local people here. That's very important to us. Yeah. The environment is something that's a concern to me, and I'm very proud of the fact that since I've been on the board, we've actually lessened the size of the growth area. Over the master planning process, we've got less area in the growth area now than we did some time ago. I'm also very proud that we had a park. We had some land that the county owned at Pretty Creek, and a lot of you know where that is. That sat dormant for 40 years. The county had owned it, and it was brought to my attention early on in my time on the board. I went out and I worked very hard. It took me 8 years to get that to be a park, and now it's such a great opportunity for local residents and to enjoy the passive activities that you can have there, as well as we're getting very popular with the equestrian people who now have riding trails. I think they were using them sort of illegally before, but now they can use them legally for the park. I'm also very proud of the Byron Park. Between these two, it's a little over 1,000 acres of parkland, local parks that have been established. Okay.
Okay, thank you very much, Ken. Our next speaker is Cynthia Neff.
Hi, thank you very much for coming here this afternoon, as well as thank you to the senior statesman and Bill for hosting this. This is a great opportunity for all of us sitting up here. You know, my career as an IBM executive took me to many special places, but I'm really proud to call Albemarle County my home. I enjoy my neighbors, our county's natural beauty, and the quality of life that we have here. Like many of you, I've worked to try to keep it special. I left retirement to serve the public by speaking out for those who don't have a voice, people with AIDS, abused children, the environment, and the working poor. By listening and being willing to discuss hard issues, I believe we can really determine a shared vision for our community. You know, giving citizens a chance to be part of decisions and providing regular input into where our county is heading is really one of the main reasons I'm running to represent the Ravana District on the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. Open, transparent government means giving citizens a voice before decisions are made. It means conducting our business in the bright sunshine with respect, honesty, and integrity. Business development and economic interests have a strong voice in the county, as they should. But it's time for someone to provide balance and ensure a strong voice for the people who live here as well. Economic vitality for our community is critical, but it means more to me than just growth and development. It means providing a truly world-class education system so our kids can go on to invent new industries and new technologies. It means preserving the beauty and the quality of life we have here so businesses and employees want to be here. It means sending signals to companies with good-paying jobs that were forward-thinking and invested in green technologies and sustainability. It's also about priorities. Do we continue to cut incrementally, or do we look at rethinking the way we actually do things? And do we even work together to try to determine how we can make investments in what make this place so special? At the end of the day, we can only generate revenue for our county if we all pay more, or we get good-paying jobs in here that can also pay more. Speaking of sustainability, though, there is a word that has been misused and abused. Some members of the Board of Supervisors currently believe it's just another way for the government to control you. I believe sustainability is at the heart of what this race is about. I ask you, is it sustainable to continue to clear-cut for new development when we haven't invested in the infrastructure to make it all work? Is it sustainable to throw millions of dollars at a road without any investments in public transportation, biking trails, hiking trails, and light rail? Is it sustainable to pretend that climate change is a conspiracy theory and not do everything we absolutely can to protect our environment and the natural areas? Sustainability is about protecting and preserving this special place and taking responsibility for leaving something of increasing value to our children and our grandchildren. I really believe that Albemarle County and our community is at a pivotal point. And with the county's comprehensive plan that kicks off at the end of this month and runs for the next 2 years, we have a real opportunity to make an assessment of where we're at, what we've done, and where we're going. We need someone that's going to ensure everyone's input is welcomed and valued as decisions are considered and before they are made. Someone who'll provide balance to make sure your interests are represented, a shared vision for our future. Together we can reach it, but you need a supervisor who will listen and advocate, someone who will be your voice. It should be your vision and your decision what shapes our community. It should be your vision and your decision on our future, and that's the one that counts. Thank you.
Thank you, Cynthia. Next, we have Chris Dumbler.
Absolutely. Thank you very much to the senior statesman for hosting this forum. Thank you to the Senior Center for allowing us to be here. I'd like to also thank everyone who's helped out with my campaign so far. I've met so many wonderful people, and I wouldn't be here now if not for them. Thank you also to everyone who's sitting up here right now at this table. Even though we obviously had some pretty big disagreements on some important issues, putting yourself out there as a candidate is a really big deal. And obviously, I respect everyone up here a lot for doing that and for putting themselves out there. And I'd also like to thank all of you for your questions, for taking time out of your busy afternoons to come out here, because we do have some pretty serious issues facing our county. We have some pretty big problems. We have potentially unchecked and unplanned for growth that threatens to clog our transportation infrastructure and overcrowd our schools. We face a globalizing economy that our children are going to have to compete in, and we face probably one of the worst economic situations that this country and this county has had to face in decades. And these are issues that I think I understand, and they're issues that I think I'm ready to tackle if elected to the board. You know, I was raised in Stone Mountain, Georgia, which for anyone who's ever been to Gwinnett County is sort of a perfect example of what happens when you don't plan for growth, when you don't plan and have the sufficient infrastructure in place to sort of take care of those kind of problems. I'm also the son of two educators. Both of my parents teach middle school math right across the hall from each other. It's sort of cute. So I think I understand sort of the unique problems that educators face, that parents face, what works in education and what doesn't. After I went to Georgia Tech, got a degree in chemical engineering, I moved up here to go to law school, to go to UVA Law. And then I opened my own small business, my own practice down in Scottsville, Virginia. So I think I understand sort of the difficulties of opening up a small business and the importance that business and economic development and job creation play in our county as a whole. And these are all issues that I think I have the capability to tackle. We really do need a vision for our community. We need a holistic, comprehensive vision of what we want Albemarle to look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, even 50 years from now. And that's what the comprehensive plan is for. And that's why it's so important. I think we deserve that vision. I think we deserve to have a government that's accountable, a government that creates a vision like this and then implements it and executes it, even in the face of opposition from vocal minorities, from powerful, rich interests, or from special interests. I think we deserve a government that's collaborative, a government that actually works with the University of Virginia, works with the city of Charlottesville, and works with surrounding localities to solve regional problems, that have regional solutions. And I think we deserve a government that's responsive, a government that actually focuses on the issues that matter to the residents, not only of the Scottsville District, but to county residents as a whole. Issues like economic development and job creation, issues like funding our transportation infrastructure, and issues like ensuring we can offer a world-class education for our children so that they can compete in the new global economy of the 21st century. I think I have the energy and the enthusiasm to listen to all sides of these issues, not just the 5, 10, 15 people. Obviously, this room is full of very civically engaged people, but this room does not represent everyone who could vote in Albemarle County, everyone whose lives will be affected in Albemarle County. I've knocked on over 4,500 doors since I've started my campaign. I've walked down mile-long driveways, and I have talked to people who feel like they've been left behind by the county government, and people who have never been touched before, but people who care, but who are too busy putting food on the table for their families at 6 o'clock on a Wednesday night to make it out to a board meeting, or are too busy working a second job. Those are the people we also have to listen to, and I think I have the energy and the enthusiasm to find those people, listen to all sides of the issues, and craft the right solutions for our future and for our children. And I thank you very much again for having me. I look forward to the debate.
Thank you, Chris. And next we have James Norwood.
Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank the folks who run the Senior Statesman of Virginia for hosting this event. Thank the members of the Senior Center for all they do in the community, and also for the people that take care of this flower garden out here, right on the other side of this wall right here. Whoever they are, they're wonderful, because I've watched that for the last, I don't know how many years, and they do a great job in maintaining that flower garden. As I go door to door over the Scottsville District, I'm asked continuously, why are you running for office? And that's a great question. I bring lifelong experiences, which include a 43-year marriage to my wife, Joan. We have 5 children. We have 7 grandchildren. And we were blessed with a child with special needs. Our son, John, was born with Down syndrome. My wife, who is a certified teacher, spent the majority of her teaching career mainstreaming John through the public education system. And today, John works at UVA Hospital. He's been there for 13 years, works in the cafeteria. John reads. He reads the newspaper every day. He writes. He travels by air with his wife, who also has Down syndrome. And I think that's a tremendous credit to the public education system. All this progress I know firsthand, and that prudent funding for education is a priority so that we can promote highly qualified students to compete on a worldwide stage. But also, we look after those, all children who need to be better prepared for life after school. All children. I have a career in business management that has spanned some 45 years, and much of this career was spent in private business. I've created jobs for hundreds of Virginians. I've met payrolls and provided good competitive paying jobs. I will lead the charge to expand our present businesses that will take much of the heat off the need for expanding or raising taxes if we support our local businesses and generate taxes through those expansions, generate jobs through those expansions. It will go a long way towards covering our revenue needs. As I go, as Director of Economic Development in Scottsville, I work very closely with Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling, his staff, and the Thomas Jefferson Economic Development Partnership here in Charlottesville, and other local Scottsville officials. In writing, I was asked to write the economic development plan for Southern Albemarle County. Scottsville, believe it or not, has expanded in the last 12 to 18 months. They've expanded in the private sector with many new businesses, restaurants. We have a steel fabrication company. Believe it or not, that little town is prospering right now, and we have a long way to go. I believe that economic development is my number one priority for the county. I'm very excited about the recent decision to build the Route 29 bypass, the 29 business expansion, Meadow Creek Parkway, the dam construction, and other infrastructure projects that have been adopted and needed so badly. The economic benefit to our community from these projects comes at just the right time during these very difficult economic times. Job creation and local spending could add some $900 million to our gross domestic product in this metropolitan area. We presently, or as of 2008, we have $8.8 billion in gross domestic product. So you can see the effect of this job creation and the fact that we have these projects funded, not necessarily out of our own pockets. I've been outspoken about the need for safety improvements to Routes 20 and 53, and if elected, I will champion the request to VDOT to fund the necessary improvements. Transportation and service additions to the Scottsville District must be visited so that the Mill Creek and Scottsville constituents have better mobility and access to the wonderful facilities in the greater Charlottesville-Albemarle area, such as the hospitals and doctor's offices. Again, thank you very much for inviting me today. I'm very pleased to be here, and I look forward to representing those folks from the Scottsville District, and I would appreciate your vote.
Thank you, James. Next, we have Ann Malik.
Thank you. And thank you all for the invitation and for your dedication to local government. As elected officials, we need constant input from our citizens in order to make the best decisions for the community. And in the Whitehall District, where the opinions are varied, we have to work hard to establish a middle ground where people agree, where we can make some progress. I've seen many of you at meetings and received emails and mail and letters from many others. Thank you all for your input. My husband Leo and I have a family farm in Earlysville where we've lived since 82 on some land that Mom and Daddy got back in the 50s. And so I've watched this area change in a graceful way, mostly, over the 61 years that I've been alive. We have two daughters and three grandchildren, and thus I have a very strong focus on the future to make sure that we are doing our best job now to leave a good future for our children and grandchildren. During the election cycle, or in the year of 2007, before the previous election, the county was growing and changing at such a pace that longtime and new residents kept asking me, where is the county I knew when I came, a long ago, or when was born here, or just came the year before? In the last 3 years, we have faced a different issue, one of slowing economy and the necessity to shrink our budget. Remember back to 2007, when the Board of Supervisors at the time chose to cut the tax rate by 6 cents, rather than set aside a portion of that as a rainy day fund. The county government was lean before the downturn, which has made the reduction of more than 70 positions and 20 teachers mean a true reduction in service. We as a board have faced the necessities and have done the best we could. Once the economic rain began to fall, though, it was not the time to establish that rainy day fund, but we do need to build one over the next several years. Albemarle County faces state government's desire to hand over or devolve its highway responsibilities to us as localities. We need to stand shoulder to shoulder with counties across the state to tell the General Assembly no. To maintain thousands of miles of roads in Albemarle County would be a huge expense. And also, it's inefficient to have each jurisdiction having its own Department of Public Works with repetitive machinery purchases and supplies. Much more reasonable to do it on a statewide basis. Local government is watching the economy carefully, tempering our eagerness to get building on projects which are long deferred and designed, such as the Crozet Library, with the cash demands of servicing the mortgage on those projects. The county must balance this just right. We must also balance our desire for economic recovery with protection of the environment and the values our citizens hold for our own very special quality of life here. My 5 minutes is about up, but I look forward to hearing your questions and also to working with all of you over the next 4 years. And thank you for having us today.
Thank you, Ann. Now, is there anyone who hasn't turned in their question that wants to? Then we will start. I'm drawing these from random, so they're going to be a little bit all over the place. The first question is for all the candidates, and we'll just go right down the line, starting with Mr. Boyd. In light of the failing economy, mounting national debt, and loss of jobs on a national scale, what is your top priority for Albemarle County for the next 4 years?
Well, I think in my opening remarks I mentioned jobs. I think that's a top priority and has to be a top priority. And it's not for government to create jobs, because we don't create jobs. What we do, if anything, is destroy jobs. I mean, we do the exact opposite, because through legislation, if we make it such that companies can't flourish because our regulations are too rigid for them, that's not going to be good. So what we're doing now, and the reason we have an Economic Vitality Action Plan, is to look at all the regulations that we have in the county, keep those that we absolutely need to maintain the integrity of our environment and to maintain the integrity of this community, and then do away with those that are just simply in the way of allowing businesses to. I was at a recent roundtable of businesses and listened to some of the concerns that they had. They're very valid. We need to listen to our business community. We need to keep our employers who now are employing people here, because we're losing some of those. You can look at ConAgra and Comdial and some of the others that we've lost in recent years. We've got to keep these jobs here. We have to incubate new jobs. We have to work with the university, which we are doing, to incubate those jobs and to create new jobs. And that's what we need to do in the area to turn around this economic situation.
Thank you. Now, Cynthia Neff.
Thanks. It's actually a great question. I think it's one that's probably on everybody's mind. You know, my real priority would be kind of twofold. I think that there's a lot more work we can do with the University of Virginia. If you look at the amount of money that UVA spends every year in acquiring stuff for the university. Very little of it is actually acquired here. I mean, one of the things that we have a real opportunity is to look at the kinds of stuff that they are currently outsourcing to other places and see if there is something that we can do to actually try to make that work, whether it's providing some kind of tax incentives. I agree with Ken. I think it's all about nurturing new technologies. I spent much of my career in the Silicon Valley. I saw new companies come and go, but overall I saw government create an atmosphere where businesses could come in and thrive. And I think that's what I was trying to talk a bit about earlier. I think that's what we need to do in the short term is make sure that we've got a place like that where people are excited and interested to move here. The third thing I'd really say is it's about education. I mean, at some point when things get really tough, you still have to make an investment. If we don't have kids in our school districts focused on math and science and able to take the jobs of tomorrow, we're not going to excel. You know, if we invest in our children taking, you know, enriched programs where they can actually build things, invent things, and start new businesses, I think we'll be much better off than we are today, and we will start to see that. Now is not the time to pull back from our education investment, the investment in our community, and as we move forward.
Chris Dummler.
So first, let me say I agree with Cynthia that obviously investing in education and transportation is critical to attracting good, high-paying jobs to Albemarle County. And I'll also say that I agree to an extent with Ken that, you know, I think the way we need to approach economic development in Albemarle County is twofold. First, we need to identify unleveraged and underdeveloped opportunities and sectors. And secondly, we need to find out why they are unleveraged or underutilized. Remove barriers. And sometimes those barriers are government created, but sometimes they're not. And sometimes government can do a little to help lubricate those skids and make it easier for those businesses to develop. So let me give two examples. The first is, as Cynthia was talking about, UVA. UVA spends $600 million annually in procurement. $600 million. That's federal money, that's state money, that's money coming in from Northern Virginia for tuition paid by students, by parents. And that's money that can and should remain in this community. So why isn't it? What's the barrier? One of the barriers is the procurement process. It's incredibly complicated. It's federal, it's state money. You have to be the lowest bidder. You have to have certain minority ownership in the businesses, that sort of stuff. And small vendors here in Albemarle and Charlottesville sometimes just don't have the time to break through that morass. And so one of the things government can do is provide that information, is to help small local vendors sort of break through that barrier. An additional problem is that sometimes local businesses can't be the lowest bidder. And so we can carefully structure tax incentives and tax breaks to encourage Albemarle County and Charlottesville businesses to be the lowest bidder, such that we keep that money circulating in the community. A good example of sometimes where government regulations can be burdensome is in the rural area. In the southern parts of the Scottsville District, for instance, we have some government regulations, some zoning regulations that are well-meaning, they're well-intentioned, but they're a little overbroad. And if we could find a way to trim them down with regard to family farms, with regard to bed and breakfasts, we could do a lot to keep money in the area.
Thank you very much. Next is James Norwood.
Thank you. UVA is, of course, the biggest economic stimulus in this general area. They generate over $1 billion a year, $1 billion a year out of that 8.8 in gross domestic product. Small businesses are not prepared, nor can they afford to get into the bidding game with a university of that size. They want the lowest price. Lowest price means a smaller margin. Smaller margin means less available money to pay people and to operate their business. What we need to do is we need to concentrate on the businesses that we have in our county now, help them expand their business, buy local, stay with them. Don't get on the go outside the county to buy. Stay in Albemarle County to buy the products that are available and use the services that are here. I feel that we need to expand private business. I think we need, and through that, we will create jobs, just like we're going to create a lot of jobs through the construction of these projects. We need to keep the government out of the way of private entrepreneurs. Less government, more margin, more profit, more jobs. It's very simple. And I think that I feel strongly that we need to build retirement communities here. I think this is one of the best communities on the East Coast, and we should attract more people to spend the rest of their life here to enjoy the university and the incredible medical facilities we have.
Thank you. And now, Ann Malik.
Thank you. We certainly must have Albemarle County ready to compete with adequate infrastructure, with a strong education system, and also with employees who can do the jobs that are needed by our future employers that we're hoping to attract. Our workforce system here is working very hard with a unified effort at the one stop on Hydraulic Road to provide business services to small businesses who would like to expand, and also to help in the training programs for laid off workers and for people who are hoping to improve their skills in order to get a better job. We also know that about 30% of our residents go outside Albemarle County to work, and another 30,000 employees come into Albemarle County from other places to work every single day. That mix match means a lot of people on the road, when if they could find jobs closer to home, that would help them to have more time with their families and doing other things than sitting in a car and also requiring more transportation infrastructure. We do need to use our strengths. We are a special place. People all around the country and the world know that we are a special place. And the companies who are coming here are coming mostly because they want their company logo to be identified with the strengths that Albemarle County has. Our environmental protection, our green focus, those are things that we are known for and have been known for 30 years or more. And the people who come here want to be identified with that and want their name to be associated with it. So those values are things that we should be sure to not throw aside in order to somehow lower our performance bar, lower our quality of life. Because we will not win in the end. Our land will never be as cheap as someplace else. We need to choose the target. There is a target study going on right now which will help us to identify the best preparation that we have, the best assets we have to attract other companies to come here. We also need to remember that the agricultural economy is a very strong one and a very important one in our county. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. This next question is a specific question to Cynthia Neff. Do you find any objectionable goals listed in the 1998 Sustainability Accords of the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission?
Any objectionable goals? Is Dr. Charles Baddick here? You and I are never going to agree on this. I don't know if this is your question. You know, but I don't see the Sustainability Accords as a giant conspiracy to try to tell us all what to do. I think most of us believe that doing things like turning down our lights and recycling is smart. The business community obviously thinks that because they've just embraced a big kickoff to try to get businesses to compete to do that. I apologize. This is it's just that I am not prepared to debate the entire thing of the Sustainability Accords. I support the Sustainability Accords. I supported Cool Counties, which I know many people in this room didn't. I supported ICLEI, which many people in this room didn't. I believe the county made the wrong decision in terms of all those, so.
Cynthia, in all fairness, we have a tough question for Ken Boyd next, so.
Oh, good. Yeah.
For the protection, Ken, this is to Mr. Boyd. For the protection of our citizens, our water supply, and especially our school's children, will you demand, and demand is spelled in capital letters, that a new, complete environmental impact study be completed before construction is done on the Western Bypass?
That's an easy question to answer. There is no need to demand. VDOT has already told us that they are required to do that. And in addition to doing the study, which will be due out in the spring, they've also agreed to have public meetings and discuss that with the public, which is what we were insisting on. And they said it was not required by the law or regulations. So that's going to happen. It's already there. We didn't have to ask VDOT for anything except for we did say we wanted public input.
Okay. This is a question for all candidates, and I'll start with Ann Malik and move this way for a change. What would you do to lower the dropout rate in the Albemarle County high schools?
Lower the dropout rate. Well, I know our dropout rate is commendable and not as challenged as some other communities around us. But I think having education that is engaging, that also has an education system that encourages the whole family to participate, where parents are engaged with the school board in the issues before the schools, will really help to get people invested in our schools. We, I think, also need to expand the practical side of our education. I know my own daughter in high school was so ready to be out of there. She needed other options, other places to go to school, and taking classes at PVCC helped her to focus. There are children who can benefit from working part-time and going to school part-time, as many of my high school colleagues at Albemarle High School were able to do. So expansion of our K-Tech programs also will provide a tremendous training ground for employees that we really need here. Some of our small businesses have to train their own because it's very hard for them to find people who have the training they need for a skilled machinist or for auto repair, those kinds of things. We are not, we have a wide range of needs of employees in our county, and we need to appreciate that and the fact that lots of different people with lots of different skills all have a role to play in our future, our economic future.
The Scottsville district and knock on doors, I talk to a lot of single parents. And I think probably one of the most difficult or the most difficult things for a single parent right now is raising their children, especially in the early years. They're either without a mother or without a father. If they go to school and they're taught by if a female goes to school and is taught by a female teacher, she has very little interaction with the male, vice versa for the male gender. I think that we've got a big need for mentorship. Everyone in this room could be a mentor. And I think that if we volunteered to be mentors, to help especially these children that have come from single parent families, we could do a great job in limiting the fallout, because they'd have a gender-oriented someone to look up to and someone that could give them a lead as to what's expected when they get out of school, what they can look forward to. I think we need to consider not having social advancement. I think the children should earn their way between classes. And I think that's important. I really feel that will help the quality of our education if we try not to do social advancement, advancing anyone with any grade. And I also think that we need more private investment in our schools. I think we need private companies to come in and help, not only with mentorships, but sponsoring different classes for the students to advance so that they can move on to UVA and take, again, less burden off of the education budget.
It is a great question, and as Ann points out, our dropout rate is low, and it's gotten lower, but it can always be even lower. And I think what it comes down to is the one thing that we as government can control. You can't force parents to make their kids do their homework. But what we can control as policymakers is teachers. We can control teachers. And I think it comes down to a few things. One, we have to make sure that we're getting a value for our investment. Taxpayers are getting values for their investments. We're putting money into evidence-based practices. We're putting money in the classroom. We're giving money to places where it actually makes a difference. I think that's very important. Second place we can find more money is to fight back against the state government and the federal government when unfunded mandates come down that don't make sense, that aren't right for Albemarle County. We can push back on those with state policymakers, with state agencies, and with federal policymakers and agencies, and put that money to use somewhere where it makes an actual difference. And beyond that, I think we need to approach, with regard to teachers, all policy in Albemarle County with a mindfulness towards the impact that it has on people like educators and firefighters. I've talked to a number of teachers who teach at Cale, who teach at Stone Robinson, who teach at Scottsville Elementary, who cannot afford to live in Albemarle County. And when a teacher has to drive an hour to work, that teacher is far more likely to say, you know what, I'd rather live in Orange and drive to Fairfax where I can make $40,000 more a year. We have to approach our growth policy, our transportation policy, with a mindfulness towards that. Beyond that, I think it's about having a conversation. It's about having a conversation with voters. What are you willing to reallocate money from? Are you willing to take an extra penny on the tax rate to preserve our southern schools, to preserve Scottsville Elementary, to preserve Yancey, to preserve Red Hill? Those schools, those rural community schools that actually have an impact on student achievement, that make students want to stay in school. And beyond that, I think we do need to focus more on evidence-based practices, on practices, on good investments as far as not only teachers go, but as far as practices go that actually reduce the dropout rate.
Cynthia Neff.
I would follow on to, you know, what Chris said. You know, I've been involved in a number of educational kind of projects, and one of the things that we actually found is that the kind of pushed out rate, it is a bigger problem in many cases. You know, we have 55 kids a day in Virginia that, you know, leave school. Albemarle does not have that kind of problem. We have almost an enviable situation where a lot of our kids not only graduate but go on to college. But where we're not successful is many times the problem of, you know, as Chris mentioned, we're being told by the federal government, you know, that we must implement No Child Left Behind. No Child Left Behind is not necessarily meeting the needs of our children. It is providing that there is a standard that every child must go through. And I would ask you, if you have a kid in high school, every kid must take Algebra 1. Now, I've known a lot of people that, you know, are not going to thrive taking Algebra 1. You know, I think it was Ann who said, every child is going to go to college. Some need to learn skills. So we need to really fight to build some flexibility into that, because if a kid has failed the algebra SOL three times or failed algebra, you know, what's going to make him keep coming back to school? I mean, it's hard. It's like beating your head against the wall. So I really think that, you know, that's an important thing, is to push back. And in some cases, we might have to, you know, make up some of the help. You know, I've been a big sister. I've been a mentor. You know, those kind of things are really important. But at the end of the day, you know, we may have to sit down and talk with voters and say, you know, what is the best way to make sure all of our kids get out? This is our most valuable resource we have, and education is the thing we spend the most money on. So if we don't really all work together to get it right, it's kind of shame on us.
Ken Boyd.
I'm going to start by saying that we have what I would consider to be an enviable graduation rate here in Albemarle County. And I say that because you don't have to go too far over across the line into the city to see how much better we're doing in the county than they are doing in the city. That being said, though, and having been a father, having raised four children, some of them challenging at times with their efforts in school, I know from personal experience what is involved in educating children. I spent 4 years on the school board, and this was a top priority of ours. That and the education gap was another one that we were trying to work with. I think what we've got to do, the answer is simple. We have to support the classrooms. We have to support the teachers. When I was on the school board, I was the first person, at least that's what I was told by the teachers. I went around on a listening tour And what I did was I visited all the elementary schools and schools in my district and simply sat in the teacher's lounge and made it known that I was available for them to come in and tell me. They have great ideas about how to educate our kids. If we would quit trying to tell them how to do it from Washington, D.C. or from Richmond, Virginia, and let them do their job, I think that would be the best way to improve that grade. Thank you.
As you can imagine, we have more than several questions on the bypass. So I'm going to do this. We're going to combine some of the questions. I'm going to do this first by asking Kenneth Boyd a specific question, and then I'm going to go down the line with a general question to everybody else on the panel, and then Ken can come back and add to the general question if he wants to. So the question to Kenneth Boyd is, on June 8, 2011, at 1:45 p.m., why did you insist on adding the bypass to the board agenda? Who asked you to do this? Why didn't you consult with Ravenna District voters before introducing the bypass?
I'm trying to think of the exact meeting that you're referring to. This is on what date?
The card says June 8, 2011, at 11:45 p.m.
Well, it had been broadly sent out on that day that we were going to talk about the bypass because the MPO members, representatives on our board, had said that they wanted to take away the current restrictions about considering the bypass. It is no secret that I've been a supporter of a bypass around Charlottesville ever since I've been an elected official. I think it is a necessary road that we need. You know, prior to doing the Meadow Creek Parkway, we hadn't done a road here in this area for years. And look at our population growth. We need transportation options, and this is something we had to get done. I was just simply the person who brought up the fact that we wanted to address it again. Some of my other board members had told people because they had been there under other matters and already talked about it. So to sit and say that it was not something that the public was unaware of is a little bit disingenuous when we'd had so many people that came to that meeting early at 9 o'clock to say that they were opposed to putting the bypass, to removing our restrictions on it. I certainly am in favor of the bypass. I brought it up. It's something that I've been in favor of for a long time. I think we can make it right. We're certainly now beginning to involve our citizenry in that decision. It is not something that is new. I was here 20 years ago when we first talked about it. I saw the discussions up to as much as 10 years ago that we had about it. There's not a whole lot new that's being brought out about it that's not been discussed for years, over the years, about the best Western bypass. It was selected from 27 different options. They looked at far out, close in. There was even one that was talking about building an overpass over top of the existing 29. I was around for those days. Some of the people up here weren't around during those discussions, so they don't know that they happened. They don't know that the community discussion had been had about this and had been discussed ad nauseum for many, many years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Boyd. Now, what we're going to do is I'm going to give these questions, and we'll start with Ann Malik and go back. And if Kenneth Boyd wants to add to it, we'll give him another 2 minutes as far as these questions are concerned. The general question is, what is your view of the Western Bypass? But also, and if you care or not care to comment on these two items as part of your answer, why do the Board of Supervisors promote growth in jobs and real estate development without supplying roads and transportation infrastructure first? Also, what about the three-party agreement between the city, the county, UVA to not support the bypass? So we'll start with Ann Malik.
All right. And I'll probably combine those into one answer because 8 years I was on CHART, which is the Citizens Committee to Develop the Long Range Transportation Plan from the year 2000 to 2008. There had already been a generation worth of history involved in this issue before the year 2000. The three-party agreement you mentioned took about 15 years to achieve in itself, which was bringing together the city, county, and university to say we want to look forward ahead. We know we need new projects, but the order of the projects is important. And so the order of projects was to get the Meadow Creek Parkway done, to get the grade-separated interchange, which was discussed in the 80s at Hydraulic Road, a small diamond interchange that would have sent 29 down and under while we had sidewalks across at grade level at Hydraulic to move pedestrians and bicycles across the road. That arrangement was removed by the Commonwealth Transportation Board by one member, and that really threw our area into disarray for the planning. After that, we began working on what the alternatives would be, because the most important thing to do is to move people in a most cost-effective and least environmentally damaging way. So the CHART and the local elected officials in all three jurisdictions worked on this for years and came up with the plan to do the parallel road network, which allows small connections, very cost-effective investment, to develop Hillsdale to do continue the work on the Berkmar on the west side of 29 to make connections east and west from those roads, to allow the local citizens to have access to the stores that we need to get to on 29, which is why 95% of the traffic on 29 is us. Just like Pogo says, we are the enemy. We are the ones causing the traffic there. Therefore, we need to work on the 29 core to make this happen.
Sorry. Thank you. Next is James Norwood.
Thank you. I happen to operate a store, a shoe store, on 29 in Rio for many years. And quite frankly, when the conversation came up about the interchanges and what have you, I said, wow, we're out of business. Many of our customers were very concerned about coming out to shop in our store because of the traffic, the heavy traffic, the big truck traffic on 29. I see 29 today from the city limits up to the airport. That's our new Main Street for our county. That's Main Street. That's where people are going to go and shop and be comfortable to shop. 29 bypass is a needed road. And I can't believe that this community is so hung up on these infrastructure improvements. They need to be done. We're talking years before they're completed. And you can't wait years to talk to outside companies, inviting them to come to Charlottesville and tell them, well, we'll have the roads ready in 3 to 5 years, then you can come and settle here. It's all a work in progress. Work in progress, all at one time. So I believe very strongly in the bypass. I believe strongly in the expansion of the business. And I really commend Ken for putting together the citizens group that will have a sit down and be able to, and Dennis Rooker as well, sit down, give some private input as to what's the way this thing is going to be built, and move on. And I think that's important to us.
Chris Dummler.
So first, let me offer two caveats. First of all, congestion on 29 North is a huge problem. It's a huge problem for a number of reasons. When I talk to folks down in Scottsville who say they would rather go out to the Walmart in Zion Crossroads or go to the Lowe's over in Waynesboro rather than go up 29 North, that's bad for business. That means unemployment in Albemarle County. That means we're losing commercial tax base, which means we either have to cut services or raise residential property rates. So I acknowledge that congestion on 29 is a huge problem. Second caveat, I'm not opposed to a bypass. I have no problem with being good neighbors to our friends downstate in Danville and Lynchburg and helping them get their goods to market. That being said, I would not have voted for this bypass had it come before me for a vote, because I do not think this is the right road for Albemarle County. We're talking $300 to $400 million at the end of the day. I don't know what the final price tag is going to be. I haven't heard any firm estimates either way. But $400 million, $300 million, whatever number you want to use, is a once-in-a-generation, a once-in-a-lifetime infrastructure investment in a county. And when we had a plan on the table, Places 29, that was born of public process, that had input from the business community, that had input from citizens, from those affected, those who wouldn't be affected by it, when we had a plan that would have done twice the job that the bypass did for half the price, that would have included parallel roads, upgrading interchanges, you know, maybe not grade-separated interchanges. Those didn't have to be part of the final plan. Updating the 29-250 interchange, widening 29 at bottlenecks. If we could have done that for half the price, imagine what we could do with the rest of that money. It's a matter of being a good steward of taxpayer money, as far as I'm concerned. Second part of that question about why we don't concurrently plan transportation infrastructure with land use, I think it's a huge problem right now. I'm on the Albemarle County Natural Heritage Committee, which is a stakeholder in the Biscuit Run planning process, and I can only imagine what 20 would look like with an additional 3,000 cars every day on 20. We absolutely need to incorporate our land use decisions with our transportation planning to make sure we have the infrastructure in place to handle this growth should we decide it's the right thing for our community.
Thank you. Cynthia Neff.
I would echo probably every word that Chris said, but I would add to that, I would definitely not have voted for this bypass. You know, when we talk about, no, I have not lived here for the past 30 years, but I have probably read volumes of documents that go back well over 20 years. There has never been public support, overwhelming public support for this bypass. It's been bad for many of our communities from the very beginning, and it remains so. The fact that it now is going by 7 schools when we've had doctors who've tried to get somebody to listen to them, that this is a potential issue for our children. You know, when Mr. Boyd addressed, you know, the environmental impact stuff, yes, we have an environmental, going out for an environmental impact reassessment, but this feedback comes back in February. Guess when the bid's going out to contract? January. You know, I mean, we should be slowing this calendar down, not, or just put it in a different order where we actually get to see the impact of the environmental assessment, the VDOT study, and have public input and public review of the process before we send it out to bid and before we certainly give someone a contract for this. This was not done right. This was just not done right. June 8th was a depressing day to be a member of Albemarle County. On that night at 11:45, when most of us were ready to head home, I still remember the chair sitting there, you know, looking at the guys and saying, "What's going on?" And I think for those of us who were there that night, it was not fun. Nor was it at the MPO meeting, when it was absolutely clear that those members of the Board of Supervisors were not doing what the rest of the Board of Supervisors wishes. And that we weren't leaving there until they got a vote. Nobody could have slowed them down. And so I have to ask why. Why? Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Boyd?
Go ahead, Mr. Boyd.
Yeah, I want to add a couple of things to what I've heard up here. First of all, I was getting a little mixed up on my dates, because when you said June the 8th, you said 1:45 in the afternoon, and that was probably, I thought you were talking about the first meeting that it was brought up. If it's 1:45 a.m., if that's what you're referring the question was wrong. But the point is this, at the famous, what's now called the midnight meeting that they talk about, I didn't change my vote. My vote was the same as it was before. One of the members of the board had decided they were going to change because of new information, changed their vote. So to try and put this back on, this is something that Ken Boyd did, I think, is just a twist of the facts of what happened. I have supported the bypass the first time the vote came up, and when it came back up the second time, that late night meeting, it's unfortunate that it happened, but it would have been a very, very long meeting, as those people who were there know, on another matter. And I just reaffirmed my vote from the previous week. It was nothing unusual about that. Now, the difference between the Places 29 excluded any kind of conversation, discussion, or anything putting on the table about the Western Bypass. It was absolutely prohibited to even mention the word bypass in that whole study. That was the decision of the board at the time. That was not my decision, but that's the way it was voted for. The three-party agreement that we talk about, we have so many three-party agreements. We have them for sewer, we got them for water, we got them for solid waste, we have them for environmental studies. I don't know the one that Ms. Malik is talking about, but the one that I'm aware of that was set up about the roads was first broken by the city when they said, we don't want to have an interchange at Barracks Road, Hydraulic and 29, because it would destroy their businesses and a huge part of the 3 of those corners are in the city. They were the ones that broke that agreement. It wasn't something broken by one of our transportation people or by the county. So that fell apart then to it. There's a lot more to this story that's not getting told. The point is, we didn't have any money to build all these other things. Now we do have some money, not only to build the Western Bypass, but to widen 29, We're going to get some money for Hillsdale Drive. We're going to get the Best Buy ramp done. All the things in 29 are going to get done, too.
Thank you. This next question is for everyone, and we'll start with Ann Malik. The governor is considering proposing to the General Assembly that boards of supervisors be allowed to meet electronically. Are you in favor of this idea? If not, why not?
Well, thank you. I'm happy to go first on that one. The remembering back to my opening remarks here today, this is a partnership between citizens and elected officials. We are here to represent our citizens. We are not elected to make it up as we go along what the six people decide. So having meetings out of the public view means we do not have the benefit of our citizens' input, their great ideas. We don't have a chance to develop the kinds of support that we need. So I would be very against any changes in the sunshine rule or whatever you call it, which would allow meetings to happen out of the limelight. We've heard in the news other counties whose members have gotten themselves in hot water about this, and for very good reason, because decisions are made inappropriately. Thank you.
James Norwood.
I would support the old-fashioned way of meeting and not electronically. Thank you.
Chris Dummler.
It sounds pretty neat, but I have sort of the same concerns that Ann has, a fear of a lack of public input, a lack of public notice. I think accountability is absolutely critical in elected bodies. You know, I'm sitting up here, I'm talking about the comprehensive plan, I'm talking about needing to have a vision, and that sort of vision cannot evolve without citizen input, without people coming to the table and actually, you know, participating in that discussion. And it's absolutely critical that those people sometimes be there at meetings to hold us accountable for our votes. When I say us, of course, I mean the Board of Supervisors. And so I would not support a meeting like that. I would support the traditional style of meeting.
Cynthia Neff?
No, I would not support that. If anything, I think that, you know, our role as community members and community leaders would be to be out in the community. I would like to see myself sitting at the Forest Lakes Meeting Center and having meetings once a quarter, or down on Pantops or out in Keswick, sitting down once a quarter and saying, what's on your mind? Here's what I know. What do you? You know, and so not less. We certainly need more face-to-face and input rather than less.
Ken Boyd?
No, I don't support that. I think we need open meetings. It's a very important part of the American process.
This next question is for all of the candidates, and we'll start with Ken Boyd and move down. Many county residents are land rich, cash poor, are on fixed incomes. As county supervisor, would you vote, one, to raise taxes in order to fund new projects, or two, to adjust county spending to reflect economic realities in our county?
Well, first of all, I think I addressed a lot of that in my opening remarks. I certainly am not for growing government in these tough economic times. You know, one of the things that we learned back when we were talking about land use, and there was an attack on property rights some years ago, and I remember a huge meeting at Burley Middle School where a lot of people came out. I said they came down from the hills, and they really did come down. And what they were was people that have lived in this community have their families have lived here actually for centuries, and they've owned property here. And they were very concerned about the fact that we were going to raise the taxes on them or take away some of their rights to build on their property. I think you absolutely cannot do that. There's a huge section of people in Albemarle County that, as the question asked, are land rich and dollars poor. And I could give you examples, but I don't want to take that kind of time here to do that. We have to keep taxes low. We have to recognize the importance of maintaining an efficient and well-run government. And as we've seen the last couple of years, we were able to do that by reducing some of our spending and keeping that tax rate low.
The next question is to all candidates. What does transparency
Oh, I'm so sorry. I apologize. Sorry.
No, it's a hard question if you just No. You know, many years in my career, I thought I was the queen of cuts. You know, I mean, it was hard to be in business, you know, coming out of the 80s and coming into the 90s. And what I found many times, which is why I said, you know, rethink how we do things. Many times you really have to re-engineer, you know, what you're doing. I know it's the third rail, and like Ken, I'm a little hesitant to bring up something that's complicated. But I find it very frustrating living here that we have two completely duplicated government systems. You know, I know at this moment that Charlottesville and Albemarle County don't seem to get along real swell, but that's just silly. You know, the fact is we have two organizations figuring out school bus routes, two organizations doing cafeteria services, two school boards, two, you know, superintendents, and on and on and on. We're looking at Albemarle County of needing more schools. They're looking at shutting one down. So it's that kind of stuff where incremental cuts is death. You know, just making incremental cuts. Sometimes we need to make the big decisions. I don't think it's up to the Board of Supervisors alone by any stretch of the imagination to determine if there should be tax increases. That's your decision. I think we should have advertised a rate increase this year just so we could have had a conversation, because as we all knock on doors, which is part of this, we all hear from people. I hear people who said, why didn't we at least talk about it? Because I'm terrified you guys are going to cut more school teachers again. And so I think this is an open, you know, community. We have to have these kind of discussions. That's what I really fundamentally believe in. And I think we would have to work on that together. It's not up to just the Board of Supervisors to determine what exactly we end up doing with taxes.
Thank you. Chris Dommler.
First, to address the issue of people who are land rich and dollar poor, I think it's absolutely important that we maintain the land use taxation policy we have here in Albemarle County. It's not perfect, but it's a good proxy for the most part for both ability to pay, and also it serves sort of an underlying policy decision that the board has made to promote conservation, to promote for agricultural heritage reasons, for cultural heritage reasons, rural lands. And so I think it's absolutely important to maintain that. Beyond that, as far as the tax rate goes, I agree with Cynthia. It's a conversation with the voters. And I've talked with plenty of voters who have said, you know, I'm glad taxes stayed where they were at for the last 3 years, but I might be willing to have an extra penny on the tax rate if it meant preserving Scottsville Elementary, or if it meant reducing the class size from 24 students per teacher down to 22. So it's definitely a conversation to have with voters. Beyond that, of course, we do need to focus on making sure that people are getting value for their tax dollars. That's always the first place you look. Before you talk about a rate increase, you got to make sure you're spending the money that's there wisely, and that's very important. But I really do think it's a conversation. I'm not going to take a no tax pledge, a no tax increase pledge, or anything like that, because I think it is the responsibility both of the board member to make a good, sound policy judgment, as well as the responsibility of the board member to go out there and talk with folks and see if they can't afford it, or if they would be willing to afford it and they feel like they would get value for it. Beyond that, I think it's important to, before we even talk about rate increases, to talk about growing the base. I think Albemarle County has, of the 19 sister jurisdictions that are comparable to us as far as urbanizing jurisdictions go, in Virginia, I think we have the lowest percentage of our tax base coming from commercial real estate. And that's a problem. We need to grow that base. We need for economic development and job creation purposes. Part of my big push on that is making rural living sustainable. It's finding a way to, you know, invest in local food, finding a way to remove overbroad regulations, and kind of growing the value of that base, growing jobs in Albemarle County so that we don't even have to have this conversation for quite some time.
Thank you. Next is James Norwood.
Yes, I thank you. I think that we have to be very prudent on the way that we look at how we share the revenue, the hard-earned revenue of for the county each year, and of course we all know we want to have a good education system, the best education system out there. We're just going to have to make hard choices to be sure that we're doing the right thing in general. Now, in my district, the average age of a property owner is about 58. And the last thing we need to do is raise their property taxes. Many of those folks are on fixed incomes. They really can't afford a tax increase. So we're going to have to find other ways to generate tax. I think we need to expand local business. We need to support local business. We need to eat in restaurants. We need to do things that will generate more tax, more revenue to our community. But I think that at some point in time, we've got to look out of the box for different incremental ways of raising revenue in this community. And I think that private sector has to be called upon to help in that regard. But we have to be real careful about taxation. It's just not the right time. We're in the worst economy in 80 years, and it's going to get worse.
Ann Mellick.
Thank you. This is a great reason why I have town halls every spring and fall, to have three places in the Whitehall district, around Crozet, around Whitehall, and in Earlysville, where I can invite citizens to come and talk to me about anything they want. But particularly in early March, we talk about the budget. And so I have a very strong understanding of the wide-ranging opinions, but also the depth of those, the breadth of the opinions, having heard from so many citizens about the issue. We've talked a lot in the last couple of years about the equalized tax rate as the values of properties have fallen, to keep the bill the same and then have the rate increase. The Albemarle County is one of the few places where there is a very strong interest in the number, the tax rate number, as more important than what the total dollar figure is. But the citizens in the Whitehall District, although they don't agree about a lot of things, they did come to agree that even though they didn't like it, they understood the tremendous needs that the county had and that they could survive with the equalized tax rate. The board did not choose to pass that this past year or the year before, but I do feel that the Whitehall District citizens had really expressed their views very, very clearly to me on that. The land use program, as others have mentioned, was founded to support agriculture as a thriving part of our economy. It's a state program with very strict guidelines, and Albemarle County adopted those state guidelines in 1973. After about 10 years of work on my part, the county did establish 3 years ago, a revalidation program to require that landowners in land use assessment actually refile every 2 years to show how they are complying with the state regulations, to make sure that our program is operating appropriately, that we are following the guidelines that are necessary. And this has kept it going. It's a very effective program to protect people. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, this question is for everyone on the panel, and I will start with Ann Mellick. What does transparency in government mean, and how would you uphold this idea?
Transparency, is that what you said?
What does transparency mean?
Right, okay. Well, one example of how we've improved that at the Board of Supervisors level is that we adopt our agendas on the day from a draft agenda, which means that we have moved the board items to the end of the meeting to try to hold to our agenda times a little better. But also at the beginning of the meeting, each of us who has an item that we'd like to have discussed, especially if there is action that will be requested, that we introduce that item at the 9 o'clock hour to make sure that everybody in the public is aware of that, that people listening on the radio are aware of that, so that there will be no surprises when come 5 o'clock we talk about something of great import to people. They have a chance to listen in online to the live streaming meeting and figure out when to come back in that way. Transparency also means that we're taking our votes in public. We're explaining why we vote a certain way. We are meeting people in the grocery store and on the street, and people are very generous with their time with us and ask questions and explain what their views are, if they're different than mine or support something that I have done. And having that accessibility goes hand in hand with transparency, because it's very important for people to know how to find their representatives and to convey their wishes. So it is essential to build trust in government that we do have transparent processes and we stick to them. Thank you.
James Norwood.
I think the system that we have right now, that the board has right now, is open to the public, and that is as transparent as you can get. The one thing, however, that I think is what a lot of folks don't realize, in addition to the board meetings that the supervisors have a plethora of meetings to attend on different issues, and I've been to most of them in the last month, and there are a lot of them. Now, if you really want to see transparency, go to all the meetings, because then you're going to hear about the water problems, the dam problems, issues that are important to you and that might be on the docket for a Board of Supervisors meeting, but the in-depth conversation was held at a separate meeting of Rivanna Sewer and Water. Yes, last night was a very informative meeting we had. So I think, and that just contributes to the transparency. The information is out there. The freedom to solicit that information is there. It's just a question of the public taking advantage of that.
Chris Dumler.
I agree that transparency is absolutely critical. When you spend public money and people don't understand where it's going, people begin to resent the system. They begin to think they're not getting value for their tax dollars. They begin to think they're being left out. And when they aren't participants, active participants in the process, they begin to resent it. And then they want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and nobody wants that. I think public notice and process are absolutely critical. Deliberation, for instance, the comprehensive plan that we've been talking about that's coming up. The comprehensive plan is the time when everybody should understand that we are coming together to make the growth, development, infrastructure, et cetera, decisions for our county for the next 5 years, as opposed to approving spot rezonings every 2 years whenever somebody comes before the board and they want something else put in the growth area. It's not the time for that. The time for that is when the comprehensive plan is reviewed. Everybody knows that's what it's for, and everybody will have the opportunity to come forward, to voice their opinion for or against something, but everybody knows that that is the time. It's very important that we follow that kind of format for people to know when they can come forward and express their opinion. And as such, you know, I mean, transparency, like I said, is absolutely critical, but I just wanted to give that example there as an illustrator.
Thank you very much. Cynthia Neff.
Yeah, for me, kind of transparency is you know, where you start. I think, you know, it's been really one of the things that I have found interesting about this county is that, you know, we do have Board of Supervisors meetings, but many times you sit there and you know that there's things that have gone on that you don't understand. Our barrier of our entry into participation and transparency is pretty high here. You know, it's a complicated business, local government. But as one who has really studied, you know, and looked for different documents and trying to, you know, wind my way back through this, it's not always easy to pin a simple thing together. Like one of the questions I asked the other day to the county, with all this resource and all this information, what's the build out of the northern part of 29, once North Point and Wendell Woods Land and Holly Mead and this one and that one? Can just somebody tell me? And nobody can. So when I say transparency, I mean it's not just that we make our information accessible to people, but that we really try to make sure that people understand what's going on. I find it pretty inconceivable that at this point, after all the development that's been approved around me, that nobody in the local government can tell me what that build-out number is, and they don't track it. And so I think transparency is more than just a commitment to making sure that people have access to the information if they look at it. With all due respect to Mr. Norwood, I don't think we can expect our citizens to go to as many meetings. That's why people do this. That we're insane. But I mean, we do this because we feel a compelling need to provide public service. I can't expect people with children, you know, that's why it's hard to get people to run for office. It's why we have, you know, so many of us are retired, because it's hard to run for office and go to all these meetings. So I just think it's really got to be a balance between a commitment to being open, a commitment to not trying to hide things, and then taking that extra step of making sure that people can understand what we're doing.
Thank you. Kenneth Boyd.
First of all, I want to clarify that I'm not retired, and I do run a small business and able to do this. But I think that we have a very transparent government here now. And if you think about the technology advantages that we've got, first of all, we have live streaming in some cases, maybe today, of both audio and video of our meetings that we're having. We have got news coverage now. We've got so many more news stations and TV stations than we had years ago, and they cover all this stuff. We have we've gotten awards for the website that we have that provides information. We have a thing called A-mail. I tell everybody, every time I see them and they want to know something about what's going on, sign up for our A-mail if you've got, and then you'll get a notice about anything that's going on in the county here. We have a lot of transparency here, but this one thing that I wanted to mention, and I think this is something we lose track of at sometimes, is some of the comments I've heard tonight seem to be getting away from that. Our founding fathers set up a representative form of government, not a pure democracy. I don't know of any place that a pure democracy has ever succeeded as a civilization. The Greeks tried to have it, and they failed, of course. We have a representative form of government. People come and they elect their representative to represent them on the board. And that doesn't mean that as I'm thinking about saying here, well, we should go out and talk to everybody about every issue that comes up. I have never placed a vote that somebody didn't come up to me afterwards and said, you didn't listen to me, because there's always another side of that issue, and there always will be. And that's why the representative form of government has worked for so long in America today, and I think we need to do that. Now, you all are here to elect a representative in the districts that we represent, and I hope that you think hard about that, that you elect the right person with the right kind of background and the life experiences that you need to represent you on the Board of Supervisors.
We have time for only one more question, and I'll start with Ken Boyd and ask the candidates to answer it as briefly as they can, since we like to close on time. What would you do to encourage small manufacturing in Albemarle County?
I'll try and be as brief as I can, because I've made statements on this many times before. We need to improve affordable light industrial property here in the county. And if we can get that accomplished, then we'll bring in some light manufacturing, and the right kind of manufacturing you want. Light industrial property.
Thank you. Cynthia Neff?
I would echo what Mr. Boyd has said, but in addition, I think what we really need to do is begin to exploit other kinds of businesses. I mean, I don't know that we're going to save manufacturing in Albemarle County. We should look for opportunities everywhere they exist and try to nurture and develop them. But I think that there's a lot more kind of, you know, high-tech stuff coming out of the universities, partnering with them, that we should explore.
Chris Dunmore?
I'll agree with both Ken and Cynthia. Small manufacturing is critical. We had a plant very recently down in Scottsville, the Uniroyal plant, go out of business, and it's now been bought by Dr. Hurt. And I think public-private partnerships are a key part of getting manufacturing jobs like that back in Albemarle County. Working with Dr. Hurt, whether it's tax incentives, whether it's partnering with UVA, just finding some opportunity to get something in that building will be critical, I think particularly in the Scottsville district.
James Norwood.
I think this this question basically represents an opportunity for the county and University of Virginia to partner in putting together a partnership that will establish those different kinds of products that could be manufactured in this area. And UVA has these incubator businesses that have grown dramatically in the real economy, and I think this would be a great opportunity to utilize the partnership and relationship with UVA to attract and develop those light manufacturing jobs.
Thank you, and Ann Malik.
Thank you. We are working on understanding more thoroughly our inventory of light industrial properties, and also toward changing the zoning on properties which are called light industrial in the comp plan but are not properly zoned. Having the zoning fixed ahead of time with the agreement of landowners would take one step out of the process if someone was interested in investing here. We also have what is a shortage we probably can't do anything about, which is empty new flex space ready to go. But we do have buildings that are ready to be repurposed or soon ready to be repurposed. There's a great success story over at Comdial as that has been repurposed into many smaller businesses who may start out there and then as they get more successful move into their own properties in larger fashion. We've been able to work with our business facilitator, Susan Steinmart. She's been on the job 12 hours a day, it seems, making sure that properties that are becoming available are finding the best access. The microware success was terrific. So we also have properties in Crozet that are under environmental remediation now, but within the next several years will become that will become resolved and those properties will be ready to be used. Tens of thousands of square feet available. The same at Teledyne in Earliesville, a former manufacturing plant there. So as these problems are resolved, we will be able to use our best energies toward getting the companies in there and having places for our university startups to have their own bricks and mortar is also a really important part of the task. Thank you.
Thank you. And this concludes our forum. I want to thank the participants, the candidates. I also want to thank everyone for coming today and for providing us with excellent questions. So thank you all very much. Let's give our candidates a good round of applause.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.